We're going to cover chapters 18 through 22 this morning. We're not going to read every word of every chapter. You'll see, just a glance will tell you that a large portion of these chapters are more names and places. That's not to say they aren't important, and I'll encourage you again, as I did last week, to go through these carefully on your own with kind of a fine-tooth comb. Get a concordance, get a Bible atlas or encyclopedia, and look up every name and look up every place and find them on the map and see how they connect with one another and see whose grandfather was whose uncle and how all those pieces fit together. It's a lifelong study. That's why we won't try to accomplish it here in the next 30 or 40 minutes, but I'd definitely encourage you to do it. But there are some things that we can kind of grab from the big picture here and work with. Now, I'm going to spend the majority of our time in chapter 18, and actually, you know, if the clock is running long, we may just break this up and finish it next week. Anyway, at this point, now it's been 7 years since God's chosen people began the process of possessing God's promised land. And you remember the story. They came in like gangbusters. You know, there was Jericho, there was Ai, there was Gibeon, there were the kings of Jebus, which is Jerusalem, if you haven't figured that out yet. Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish, Eglon. Sure, they had some setbacks, but they got straightened out and on the path, and they're following the Lord, and they're obeying the Lord, and they're trusting the Lord, and he's coming through with his promise loud and clear, and they are taking possession of the land that he promised all the way back in the time of Abraham. But then, you know, 7 years into this deal, it kind of begins to slow down a little bit. It starts to drag down, just slightly at first, kind of gradually, but eventually what happens is here, by the time we get to 18, they've kind of ground to a complete halt. Not much action, not much excitement, not much faith, not much obedience is being practiced at this point. And, you know, that's just how it is so often with us. We start out excited and enthusiastic, kind of blasting off like rockets. We're so glad to be forgiven and free that we go after God with everything we've got. You wake up in the morning and your first thoughts are, thank you, Jesus, for giving me life and rescuing me from the pit I was in. And all day long, even though you're just working and going to school and taking care of the kids and mowing the lawn and doing all that stuff, you still have this constant, this thrill of being connected with your Creator. And, you know, the last thing at night when you lay down and close your eyes, you just kind of are saying, thank you, Lord, for this day and thank you for tomorrow. And then you drift off to sleep and then you dream about the Lord. I used to do that. I used to dream I was serving the Lord. And then I remember I would wake up, you know how you wake up just enough to kind of fluff your pillow or roll over or something? And I would kind of go, oh, thank you, Lord. That's how it is when you're brand new and red hot and you're going for it and God is delivering on every promise and you just can't say no. But then things just kind of start to slow down, and even though we've seen the Lord move in so many ways with such power, we forget all of that and we find ourselves looking to ourselves and to the world to occupy us, to satisfy us, to get us what we think we need, and on the outside and on the inside. And that's exactly the condition we find Israel in at this point in time, 7 years after they entered the promised land. And there's really a lot we can learn from them. So in these chapters today, 18 through 22, we're going to find at least the first of three obstacles to living the life that God gives us. That is the life that Jesus died to make possible for us. So let's dig right in. If you're taking notes, get your pen ready. Here we go. You ready, Sherry? All right. If you're going to live the life that God has for you, you've got to, first of all, keep your momentum. You got to keep that momentum. Are you familiar with inertia? Inertia is the law that says an object, absent any other influences, an object will continue in the direction in which it is headed. If there's no outside forces affecting it, it will just continue. By the same token, if an object is still and no outside forces act upon it, it will remain still. Well, in our atmosphere, and every ball player knows this, when you throw a ball, it doesn't just go forever and ever. It slows down and it arcs and it falls, and that's because the atmosphere creates resistance, and that resistance acts upon that ball, that object, and so the inertia, you know, the fact that it would otherwise continue is interrupted. Follow me? This is not a science lecture, really. Well, in our faith life with the Lord, you know, it's as if we've been kind of fired out of a slingshot, but we meet resistance. We meet other people, you know, riding in the car next to us, you know, in the same house, at the same job, in the same town, in the same church, in the same place. We encounter like politics and finances and all the stuff. And before you know it, it's kind of like firing a bullet underwater. There's just so much resistance that you don't get very far and you just kind of fizzle out. Your energy's gone. Your momentum is gone. Well, there, you know, at this point in the story, 2.5 of the tribes, we remember, had been given land on the east side of the Jordan River. But they hadn't gone home yet. Remember, part of their deal of being given that land before they ever entered the promised land was that they would go in and fight along with their brothers. In fact, they were supposed to be at the front of the battle. That was kind of the price you pay for getting your inheritance, you know, before everybody else. And so those 2.5 were still on the west side, even though they're... Can you imagine leaving like a, you know, 4-year-old... And then you don't come back until they're 9. That's how long they were gone. It's like 5 years or something before they got to ever went back home. But that's what they did. So there's the 2.5 tribes over there. Now, 5 out of the remaining tribes had received their inheritance. That's what the previous couple of chapters gave us, you know, in great detail. The territories, right? Their lots in life. The boundaries were clearly drawn. The names were given about who inherits what and why and how all that works. But what about the remaining tribes? Everybody hasn't gotten their inheritance yet. And it's been given to them by God. But not everyone has gone in and settled into the land. Not everyone is living in the land that's rightfully theirs. And they, you know, you'd think they should have been excited. You know, the 5 tribes that hadn't got their land yet, they should have been excited to just go in and take what the Lord had given them. I mean, just give you a little taste, a little hint. This is what they had to look forward to. And in fact, let's turn back one book before Joshua to Deuteronomy chapter 33. This is where Moses, near the end of his life, pronounces blessings on these tribes. And I'm not going to read all of this, but just three spots, the tribes of Benjamin, Naphtali, and Asher. And this is what Moses says, for example, about Benjamin, Deuteronomy 33, verse 12. Of Benjamin, he said, "The beloved of the Lord shall dwell in safety by him who shelters him all the day long, and he shall dwell between his shoulders." That sounds a little funny to us, between his shoulders. You get the idea, though. Safety, shelter. Between his shoulders just means that you're surrounded by the Lord. I like the way the New Living Translation has this verse. He says, "The people of Benjamin are loved by the Lord and live in safety beside him. He surrounds them continuously and preserves them from every harm." Man, talk about a great place to be. Surrounded by God. I mean, you want to talk about my dad can take your dad? Verse 23 is Moses' promise, blessing to Naphtali. And of Naphtali, he said, "Oh, Naphtali, satisfied with favor and full of the blessing of the Lord, possess the west and the south." I mean, man. Now, this is the same God who parted the Jordan and made the walls of Jericho fall down and was with them when the second time they attacked Ai and, you know, straightened that mess out with the Gibeonites and led them from kingdom to kingdom and king to king. And it's all victory all day, every day. And this is the promise they had to look forward to. This is what the vision they should have had in their mind the whole 7 years they were out there fighting to take this territory. Asher, I think that's verse 24. And of Asher, he said, Asher is most blessed of sons. Let him be favored by his brothers, and let him dip his foot in oil. Your sandals shall be iron and bronze as your days, so shall your strength be. Think about that. That reference to oil, you know, filled with the Spirit and the strength of the Lord all the days of your life. What more could you ask for than to be filled with the Spirit and the strength of the Lord every day of your life? And that was the promise made by the one who'd been keeping promises every day for 7 years. And you would just think, with that in mind, with that in their memories, that they should have been excited. Their momentum should have been high. But it wasn't. It was wearing down. You know, you'd think, again, with God's track record and these promises that we just read to look forward to, they would have been just fired up to take what God had promised them. What's wrong with these people? And the same thing that happened to them is what happens to a lot of us. It's a loss of momentum. Back in Joshua 18, now the whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of meeting there. Remember, they had created they had built the tabernacle according to the Lord's instructions while they were in the desert. And the land was subdued before them, but there remained among the children of Israel 7 tribes which had not yet received their inheritance. And Joshua said to the children of Israel, how long will you neglect to go and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers has given you? See, it had been given. And his question is, how long will you neglect to possess it? How long will you put off possessing what God's given you? You know, the testimony of the last 7 years ought to be enough to inspire you and light your fire. What's wrong with you? Well, if they'd lost that momentum. You know, they were going to get around to it someday, I'm sure. Because they'd seen the other tribes set up camp in their territory, and they knew theirs was coming, but they just lost that zeal to go take it and go make it happen. And they were just kind of, well, you know, one of these days we'll get around to it. It's kind of like me in painting my well house. One of these days I will get around to it. I already know what color I want to paint it. I think I've got a brush somewhere and a roller. I've been going to get around to it for about 2 years now. But this is a little more important. This isn't just somebody's well house. I mean, my well house looks okay the way it is. I'd just like to see it a different color. These guys are talking about taking the land that God has promised them. You know, can you relate to that? I guess that's a dumb question. Of course, we can all relate to that. You know, you put your faith in Jesus. You're given promise after promise, everything you need to make it through and come out on top. You understand that he not only saves you for eternity, but gives you power to accomplish his purpose right here and right now. And we know how much we need his power to resist and overcome the world, the flesh, and the devil. There's no question about that. But somehow, we just never seem to quite get around to it. Our faith fizzles out and we lose momentum. There are a lot of reasons for that. There are a lot of reasons why we lose our momentum. Just to touch on 3 of them quickly. Living for the Lord can seem like an overwhelming task. There is just so much to conquer. I mean, to read this whole thing, let alone understand it all, I mean, the thing is, you'll never get there. But before you figure that out, you see it as something that you assume is doable. But it's so hard and so time-consuming that you realize you're never going to get it, and so you just give up before you even get started, you know? There's a lot of things that seem that way. And I got to tell you the truth, I live in the procrastination. And the reason that a lot of us put things off is because it just seems too hard. Or the other side of that is you don't know how, and that makes it hard. There's a lot of projects that I personally would like to do inside and outside the house and in the car and just in life, but I just don't know how. And I'd rather just not start, you know, than get 10 minutes into it or halfway through it and realize, well, this birdhouse is never going to hold up You know, this, whatever, this paint isn't going to stick. I didn't know what kind of paint to get, or I used the wrong brush, or I painted in the rain. That was stupid. But, you know, when you don't know, you don't know. And there's some stuff we're all comfortable with. We've had this discussion. There are guys in here that can drive a truck with their eyes closed. Now, please don't. But you could, you know, it's just that there's 10 speeds or 20 speeds or whatever, and you just know how to do it. No problem. Well, I can't even start a truck. Now, I can build a recording studio, and I'm just going to venture a guess that probably hardly anybody else here would even know how to get started with that. But for me, that's easy. I grew up in that stuff, and it just comes second nature to me. This goes here, and that wire goes there, and this is shielded, and this is not, and that's high impedance, and that's low impedance, and blah, blah, blah. You know, so that's no problem. But I don't know how to paint a well house. Well, I kind of do. But I don't know how to do a lot of stuff. And when you don't know how to move forward into the life that God's given you, not only called you to, but given you, you know, holds out offering to you, but you just don't know how, that'll keep you from getting started. That'll kill your momentum. You know, if it doesn't come naturally, seems like it's too much to do, it seems like it's too hard. You know, dying to self, which is what Jesus says is required of us, you know, twice it's recorded in the Gospels. If you want to follow me, you deny yourself. Well, that might hurt. Well, let me tell you, it does hurt to deny yourself and die. There's stuff that it's like, you know, the habits of the old life are stuck to you like leeches. And you just got to, it hurts to pry those things off. But, and so sometimes that keeps us from even getting started, you know, that just seems like too much to do. Sometimes fear of failure, kind of touched on that. You know, I'm afraid if I really jump into this with both feet and really go for it, and then what if it doesn't work out, then I'm going to look like a fool. And all my family will go, ah, see, we told you this Jesus thing was just a fad. We knew you'd get over it. We knew it wouldn't stick. It wouldn't last. We knew you wouldn't be able to see it through because you never see anything through. You quit the baseball team. You quit soccer. You quit dance class. You quit piano lessons. And now you're quitting religion. And nobody wants to be in that position. So because we don't want to fail, we don't even start. And you know, here's probably the biggest one that kills our momentum for the Lord. Sometimes living in the world just seems like more fun. Doesn't it? I mean, the rewards for work. I mean, if you know, you drink a fifth of whiskey and you're drunk now. And you're kind of happy now, at least for a little while. You know, then you're sick. That's the way that sin works. But the rewards are now. I want a deep, rich relationship, you know, with my perfect partner. But I'll settle for 2 hours with you. Am I wrong? It's what we do. The world's, the rewards are instantaneous, but then we forget that there's the downside. There's the broken hearts. There's the addictions. There's the pain and sorrow that sin brings, and not to mention the way that that disconnects us from fellowship with God and His Spirit, because we're talking to believers here. So how do we keep our momentum going? How do we keep it from dying down? Just a couple of tips. This is not the mother of all lists. Think of it more as pointers or tips. I mean, these are proven. These work. But really, it's just enough to get you started. How do I keep my momentum going? First of all, you got to realize and recognize and sort of come to grips with, confront what's happening to you. That it's happening. You know, you got to get over, you know, what's that denial? It's not just a river in Egypt. You know, you got to face the fact that, man, I'm like these guys in chapter 18. When am I going to go and possess all that God has given me? You know, I've been in this thing for years now. I've fought some battles. Everybody else, or at least a lot of everybody else, is getting their reward, their promise, but I'm just kind of going with the flow. I'm floating downstream. Unfortunately, the stream is taking me where I don't want to go, but as long as I just kind of sit here on this inner tube, it's kind of a nice ride. Yeah, there's a waterfall down there, but we'll worry about that when we get to it. Realize what's going on. You know, I'm slowing down. My fire is going out. It's like one of those songs I sang Friday night. You know, you say, Lord, when did my passion die? I used to be red hot. I was so red hot, nobody could stand me. And now, what happened? Well, see, the Lord knows what's happening. That's why it's so important to just fess up. God already knows what's going on. You might as well be honest with Him. And while you're at it, you might as well be honest with yourself. You know, as some psychologists like to say, own the problem. Take ownership of it. You know, you just look at yourself in the mirror and you say, I'm missing out on God's best. I'm making choices that cause me to miss out on God's best. So recognize, realize what's happening. Number two, isolate the problem. This is just basic problem solving, whether you're fixing a computer or a car or trying to paint a well house, you know, whatever the thing is. Isolate the problem. Why am I losing steam? You know, why is this happening? Why am I running out of gas when I used to be so fired up? I thought my tank would never run dry. People used to look at me and say, man, I've never seen anybody so on fire for the Lord in my whole life. Well, what happened to that guy? Because now they're saying, gosh, are you still a Christian? Is there something in my life, is there some part of my life that I have refused to surrender? What's that little book, My Heart, His Home? You familiar with that? It's a story about a guy who invites the Lord, you know, invites Jesus to come live with him and literally opens his home, his house. You know, come in the living room, come in the kitchen, there's the bathroom, and there's the bedroom. But then there's this one door where Jesus jiggles the knob and it's locked. Hey, well, what's in here? Oh, well, that's some stuff that you wouldn't be interested in. No, I'm interested. You know, where's the key? Oh, no, there's some stuff in there that you just don't want to see. And what you're really saying is there's some stuff in there that I don't want you to see. It's some stuff that I've hung on to that I know I should have let go a long time ago. But I keep it locked in here because I don't go in there. You know, ever. You got to let that stuff go. That's part of the problem. Am I afraid of the unknown? Am I afraid of, you know, is living for the Lord going to make me weird? Well, let me answer that for you. Yeah. Because if you're living for the Lord, you're a real goofball compared to people who aren't. But, you know, who's really a goofball? Who's normal and who's weird? I think God's people are normal and everybody else is weird. Am I trying to live the best of both worlds? Have I got, you know, one foot in the kingdom of God, but still one foot firmly planted in the world, you know, and I'm wearing golf shoes just so I don't slip. Because that's just recipe for disaster. There, what's that old saying? You're too earthly minded to be any heavenly good, but too heavenly minded to be any earthly good. You don't get the best of both worlds. You get the worst of both worlds. But that's one of those things you got to confront yourself about. Am I still so attracted to the pleasures of the world, the pleasures of the flesh, that I really, in my heart of hearts, in my most honest moments, don't want to give that up? Am I just so attached to my favorite things, my habits? You know, even though they pull me away from the Lord, they don't do anything to draw me towards the Lord, but I just have had them for so long, or I enjoy them so much, you know, am I afraid or am I unwilling to let those things go? I mean, can being filled, indwelt, and empowered by God's Spirit really be all that good? Those are the questions you got to ask yourself. If you want to keep the momentum going and not let the momentum die. Now, once you realize what's happening, and once you isolate the problem, step number three, decide and determine to move forward. Make a decision. You know, plant a flag. I honestly thought about going out and piling up a bunch of rocks like we've been reading about in Joshua, because we got lots of rocks at our place. In fact, if you wait long enough, they just come up out of the ground. It's true. I've seen it. It takes a while, but you know, you got to be patient. But I thought about stacking up some rocks. You know, every time I see that pile of rocks, I remember that's the day I decided. You know, I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. And if I forget, there's that pile of rocks out there to remind me. You gotta remember your first love. That verse in Revelation. You've forgotten your first love. Well, remember it. Remember all that God has done. You've got a whole Bible full of stuff that God has done. You've got a whole life full of stuff that God has done. You've got a whole church full of stuff that God has done. If we went around and each told our story and just limited it to two major miracles that God's done in our life, we'd be here, I don't know, a week or two or a month. We'd be here a long time because God's doing something, has done something in everybody's life. And you just got to sometimes review and remember. Look at that pile of stones or whatever it is that you use. You know, you need to remember back when you first figured out that the world makes a promise it can't keep. The first time that that light bulb went off or that switch flipped and you went, I think I'm getting something. The world makes a promise that it can't keep. Sure, just go after money. If you just have enough money in the bank, you can own, you be the bank. You are the bank. That's the promise, but you talk to Donald Trump. Doesn't he have all the money? Or one of those oil sheikhs, you know, in the Saudi Arabia or something. They're still looking. They're still searching. Fame, fortune. I always remember that kid, and I never really liked his music, but man, was he popular. Kurt Cobain, remember him? What was that band? Nirvana? Never cared for that kind of stuff. Not my kind of thing. And this guy had it all. I remember once looking, it's like he wanted pizza. He said, I want to take my friends out for pizza. Well, they didn't jump in the Bronco and drive down to Pizza Hut. They rented a 707 and flew to Italy and had pizza. This guy had it all, money to burn, money to throw away. And what did he end up doing? What did it bring him? Fame. He was adored, loved, worshipped, really, by still is by a certain segment of society. He killed himself because he got to the end of the rainbow and there wasn't any pot of gold there. That's the world making a promise it can't keep. And you think about when you first figured that out. You realized that the things that were supposed to bring you freedom only enslaved you. The world promises something, this will set you free. And what it really does is it just wraps you up like a spider and it catches something in its web. And that's how you know it's not of the Lord. The Lord, on the other hand, he offers freedom and gives you real freedom, almost, in my estimation, too much freedom, because the Lord gives us so much freedom that we're free to walk away. I kind of wish he'd, you make me stick with my decisions, you know, sometimes. But the world makes that promise it can't keep, and it's important to remember that. You know, you start talking to the Lord. Lord, it's been a long time. And he just says, yeah, I've been waiting here. Missed you. I'm really glad you're back, though. He doesn't chew you out, where you been, you know. Welcome home. What do you want to talk about? Well, I don't know, this, that, and the other thing, and I've got this problem, and I don't feel good, and they don't like me, and he won't leave me alone, and she's on my back, and the company's bringing me down, and the world's falling apart, and, everything from the president down to, they're putting a stoplight in down here. People are ready to move. By God, I'm not going to live in a place that has a stoplight, you know? I always thought it was cool to tell people, I'm 10 miles from the nearest stoplight. Can't say that much longer, you know, even if it is a flashing light, whatever they do. But, you start talking to the Lord. Lord, why do they have to put a stoplight in Toodle? You know, next thing you know, we'll incorporate. There'll be a mayor and a police station. And that's when everybody's going, well, now I'm really out of here. But, you just start talking to the Lord about what's on your mind, what's on your heart. Start with 5 minutes a day. And maybe it's while you're driving to work. You know, if you work in Longview, that's a 20-minute, half-hour drive. Just 5 of those minutes is a good place to start. Well, what do I talk about? Whatever's on your mind. You don't have to, oh, Lordeth, I prayeth unto thee, and I can't even speaketh this language, Just say, Father, I don't know what to do about this. Or, Father, today I feel pretty good. What's going to happen? Something's going to happen. But you just talk to the Lord for 5 minutes. That's all you got to do. Just pour your heart out to him. See, remember, baby steps are good. Don't be embarrassed to take baby steps. Because this journey is going to last forever. It's a lesson I learned from Keith. Keith taught me a lesson because we, bought that property up on the hill, and you got to mow it, and you got to weed whack it, and you got to paint it, and then you got to mow it again, and then you got to, the garden and the chicken coop, and then you got to mow it again, and there's all this stuff. And see, I'm a project kind of a guy. I go in there and I'll just work and then get it done. Problem is, this is never done. And Keith taught me, you just go out there and you do a little every day. Because you're going to be doing a little every day until the Lord takes you home. So just get used to that idea. Do a little every day. And that's kind of what we're talking about as you kill the momentum killers. You just start 5 minutes in prayer, talking to the Lord, and see what happens. It might turn into 10, it might turn into 20, it might turn into 5 minutes in the Word and 5 minutes in prayer. It might turn into this really cool devotional thing, and it's just a coincidence that I happen to have this today, but this really cool devotional kind of thing, it takes 5 minutes in the morning to start, and then it can grow into something that you not only discipline yourself to do, but you actually look forward to. I got to get up a little early because I got to spend my time with the Lord. Or, because I don't want to be late for work, but missing time with the Lord, that's not an option. So whatever I got to do, I'm going to do it. It'll grow into have that kind of value for you. You just show up at a home group. That was a baby step. Nobody's asking you to teach. Nobody's asking you to lead. Nobody's asking you really. I'm asking you to host, but it's optional. We only need a couple. We only need two. Everybody else, you're off the hook. Just show up. Get to know God's people. That's the whole point of them. It's not a class. It's not a test. You could be the dumbest person in the world. It'll never come out at home group. It won't. Not there. you won't be put on the spot for that kind of thing. I mean, I've been there where they've said, well, let's all turn to Galatians 5. And then there's some guy who just bought his Bible that day and starts, where's the table of contents? And everybody's going, come on, stupid, Galatians 5, and it's on page 1497, and then he felt so bad, so just intimidated, they never came back. Well, that won't happen to you at home group. It's a safe environment to just get to know people and get to know the Lord, and it's great. But that's just one example of a good place to start. Come to a concert. We just happen to be having one tonight. Or wait till the next one. But just come. God's people are getting together to do something. For me, that means I'll be there. Now, what is it that's going on? Because I'm coming no matter what. Singer, dancer, magic show, puppet show. If it's about the Lord, I'm coming. Are God's people going to be there? Yeah, well, some of them. Well, good, because those are the ones I want to see. And you don't ever forget that they need to see you just as much as you need to see them. That's how this thing works. That's how this whole deal called church works. You surround yourself with your fellow trophies of God's grace. And you encourage one another just by being together before anybody even says anything. Move out of your comfort zone, out of your isolation and fear, and let the Lord reignite your passion to know him, to serve him. The enemy will try to stop you. Don't think this is going to be easy. You're headed for the concert, and then you get that phone call. Well, can you come over? My cable's out. Sorry, Mom, I'll have to come over tomorrow because I'm going to church. Well, I'd love to help you with your cable. It's like drive 100 miles and go, blip, blip, blip. How's that? Okay, we're good. Okay, see ya. Another 2-hour drive home, But Mom, there's a concert tonight. Mom, I can't come. Well, it's Father's Day. It's Mother's Day. It's Criminals Day. It's some kind of day. It's Valentine's Day. It's Kids Day. It's Secretary's Day. It's Pastor's Day. Well, that's great. But on this particular night, I got to be with God's people, and that's where I'm going to be, and we can move the birthday party till tomorrow, because birthdays come every year, you know? Brandon B. comes once, and I'm not going to miss it, not because of him, but because the Lord's in it. The enemy will pull those things, every trick. Well, you don't have to go. You know, it's not going to be that good anyway, and you won't get much out of it, and it'll be like seeing a bad movie. You'll look at your watch and go, well, there's 2 hours of my life I'll never get back. Well, if you go into it expecting that, then that's probably what you'll get. But here's what I've learned over the years, and we will stop now and save the rest of this for next week. I have learned over the years, and I've learned this through subjective, personal experience. The least I feel like being a part of God's family, the more blessed I am when I bite the bullet and make myself go. Mary and I were part of a home group in Vancouver, this gosh, way, way long ago, 20, 30 pounds ago. And, you know, I get home from work. I was working a regular 40-hour a week job Monday through Friday. I think she was too. And I got home, the home group was Friday nights. And it was always a good time. And we liked the people and they liked us and they, you know, we knew everybody. But there was one Friday night where I just come dragging in after all week long. I said, I just can't do it. Let's watch a movie, or let's just take it easy one night. I'm pooped, and she's kind of going, yeah. Well, I'm glad you said that, because I'm just pooped as well. And so I kind of, you know, got on my pajamas and my slippers and got a bowl of popcorn and a movie, and you know, I'm parked in that easy chair for the rest of the night. And then the phone rings. And it's a guy from the Bible study, and he doesn't say, "Where are you? You know, you're supposed to be here." I left out part of the story. I had called and told them we weren't coming, and I got their answering machine. So anyway, there I am parked. They know we're not coming. Everybody's fine. The phone rings. Yeah? He says, "Hey, I got your message." Yeah, you know, I'm really tired, and Mary's tired, and we're pooped, and I got the popcorn made and the slippers on, and we're not coming. And he says, "Well, I just want you to know one thing. When you're not here, I really miss you." Well, that's a nice thing to say. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week. Hang up the phone. Sitting there, you know, crunch. Get your stuff, honey. We're going to go to the thing. But here's my real point. When I got there, I mean, it was like God was there waiting for me. He taught me stuff and showed me stuff and touched me and encouraged me and built me up in ways like even at just regular home group never happened. And that's why I'm convinced that the harder the enemy tries to get you to hold back and isolate yourself, the more blessing the Lord has for you. Somehow the enemy knows that. And so he pulls out the big guns when he knows God really is going to bless you. If you want to live the life God has for you, you got to keep your momentum going. Because if you don't keep it going, it will die. And you will find yourself wandering back across the Jordan into the desert, still saved, but totally missing out on the life that God gives you and that Jesus died to make possible. And I just wonder what brings God more sorrow. Watching the people that don't know him continue to reject him, or watching the people that do continue to reject him.